in this in these concerts, normally what we do is we like to start off talking about the music and about the pieces that you'll be playing. And normally we do it in the order that you play it in the concert. And of course, in this case, it is the Brahms double concerto in the first half, and then you'll be doing the Beethoven violin concerto in the second half. But I think maybe we should maybe do it the other way because of the influence that Beethoven had on Brahms. So let's start off with talking about the Beethoven.
Well, the Beethoven violin concerto is the pinnacle of violin pieces for all fiddle players. It's the most sought after piece for the violin in orchestra. And one of the prerequisites, of course, is to be able to play the violin properly, to play it in tune, to play with a beautiful sound. And then, of course, comes the making of the music. In Beethoven's case, it's not all that complex in the violin concerto. It's classical form. It's a combination, you know, the slow movement, for example, is G major, D major, G major. It never goes out of G major, really.
Mm-hmm.
So we have sort of, not as simplistic as, it's not as complicated as some of the quartets, for example, or some of his other pieces that I know. The Eroica Symphony, for example, there was a barrier breaker in Vienna at the time, amongst many others, but that was one of the few pieces that would always go down in history as the conversation piece for musicologists, performers. It's an incredibly complex, yet, again, a barrier breaker. He broke the mold of four bars and four bars. And, he really took that to a level that was never done before. And then, of course, comes the Fifth Symphony, which is pa-pa-pa-pa, which we know is possibly the knocking already up north there in heaven.
Yeah, right.
but, you know, the violin concerto requires an ability second to none to play it properly. And then it takes a lifetime, I have to tell you, to be able to really feel that you're on top of it, on top of the piece, on top of the concept, technically as well as, of course, musically. And that's really, that's all it requires, but it's an amazing amount of, the journey with that violin concerto is a lifetime. And hence why I think it's regarded also as one of the great pieces, because we hear changes in violinists over the years as maturity builds in and knowledge of how to do it better. If you keep your discipline and your standard up, your value system of what the music signifies. Now, that is not to say that the Brahms violin concerto is not as great. Of course it is.
Mm-hmm.
And there are few pieces that we have Elgar. The Elgar violin concerto, I think, is one of the Bartok's second violin concerto. And there are about six or seven, maybe eight great violin concertos that have been written, Mendelssohn. And they all come from the same bookshelf. I mean, for me, in the library of great pieces, they are at the top. I mean, there's just no doubt about that. That is not to say that Bruch did not write great music, and Goldmark, and Sibelius, and all these incredible composers. But then we also have the violinists like Wieniawski and Spohr and Vuitton that wrote specifically for themselves, Isai, Paganini, that also are masterpieces in their own way, but it's more from a violin standpoint rather than the actual music, music intent or content, I should say. Hence why Beethoven concerto, those few that are really the big pieces that we play, or the large, beautiful, extraordinary icons, those will remain and will always be regarded as the greatest music for the violin.
Yes, absolutely.
As, by the way, the Bach solo sonatas, partitas are.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
As we mentioned, of course, in the first half of the program, you're going to be doing the Brahms double concerto with your wife, Amanda Forsyth, a marvelous cellist in her own right. And I talked about this with Michael Stern when we were going over the season about how much Brahms was influenced by Beethoven.
Well, there's a quote from Brahms saying that Beethoven was standing on top of his head or above his head writing music. I can imagine that. I wouldn't be surprised. But You know, it's not bad to have someone like Beethoven standing above you. That's a pretty good standard.
Yeah, that's very true.
Brahms never wrote a concerto for cello, and I think in some ways the cellist certainly will tell you this is a concerto for cello, with apropos the violin also there. I don't disagree. I must tell you, I don't disagree. I've always felt that the double concerto is one of those extraordinary cello pieces with a violin playing a very major role, obviously, but because it's written for the cello specifically without any other concerto for the cello by Brahms, I think you could consider that first and foremost a cello concerto with a violin sort of playing secondary role. Of course it's not, but in a way it is. It is also, for me, in a way, said all that, and I've just said about the cello and the violin, it's actually a symphony with a concertante part, like a Haydn. Haydn has done that, too, where he wrote for, like, the four instruments, for example, the oboe, bassoon, cello, and violin, concertante. That's, again, it's a concerto for cello, violin, and the two wind instruments, but it's considered a concertante. He even called that concertante at the time. This guy calls it concerto. But actually, it is really, in a way, it's a symphony with two wonderful solo, extraordinary solo parts that are interwoven into the material. And the material itself is all but interwoven again in inversion. It goes dee pa pam pa pa pam ta da dee, second movement dee da da dum. So he does exactly the same thing but in inversion. He plays with dee dum second subject dee pa pam dee dum, which is introduced first and foremost by the clarinet after the cello cadenza, and that shows you that he was breaking form as well. Brahms was so keen on musical content in everything he wrote, but he was breaking form as well. He has a four-bar little introduction of the orchestra and a big, huge cadenza, starting with the cello. So that's really never done before. I'm not sure it's ever been done again. There are a couple of pieces, I suppose, Prokofiev, maybe Shostakovich have done that. But usually the cadenza comes towards the end of the piece or the end of the first movement in classical form.
Right.
He said, just a moment, Mr. Beethoven, I love you very much and I'm glad you're on top of me, but I'm going to change this. So he had his own way of doing things, and thank God for that.
Yeah. That's very interesting that you bring that form up, because he was very well known for sort of keeping a classical form and until really this time, which was his last major orchestral piece.
That's right. Well, he was beginning to look at different formats, and you know, he did a lot of things in his in the Requiem, the German Requiem.
Oh,
it's an incredible piece in form, not so unusual from Verdi's point of view, because Verdi also wrote a Requiem which has very much a similarity to it much earlier in the century. So, you know, these are all, I think, these composers all looked at each other's music and studied it and respected it and said, I will try and obey what the music calls for to do, but at the same time they put their own DNA in there, really. And that's where the different DNAs is what makes the music so fantastic, individual as well.
We're speaking with renowned violinist Pinchas Zukerman. He and his wife, Amanda Forsyth, will be performing the Brahms Double Concerto for Violin and Cello with the Iris Orchestra, and he will be performing the Beethoven Violin Concerto next Thursday, October 16th, at Germantown Performing Arts Center in the season opening concert with the Iris Orchestra. For more information and tickets, 751-7669 or irisorchestra.org. As we mentioned, you will be performing this piece with your wife, cellist Amanda Forsyth. You are both highly in-demand soloists and chamber players and conductor, in your case, all over the world. And I know that you have to spend a lot of time working with different organizations. What's it like to have this opportunity to play this wonderful, huge piece with your wife?
Well, we are really a unit when we step on stage to play this piece. We have done it dozens and dozens of times.
Mm-hmm.
Different ensembles, different conductors, I have also conducted it myself with the Royal Philharmonic. We've done it here in Ottawa. We're actually recording it with our orchestra sometime in February without a conductor. I'm just doing both parts, which we have done. The piece itself calls for unity in understanding each other as instrumentalists. It requires both instruments to give each other support, because that's how the music is written. When the cello plays the accompaniment, the violin plays the solo, and vice versa.
Right.
Except for the slow movement where we're playing in octaves, where it's a beautiful melody. Except for the middle section, where again there's a kind of a give and take between the man and the woman, so to speak. In this case, the cello actually is the male, and the female is the violin. And so these are all aspects that we've worked on, and we play it totally without even thinking. And I think that that's what one gets, I think, from us when we step on stage. We're not there to tell each other, oh, by the way, could you do this way? We just do it because we've done it like this. No, we do accommodate, of course. We accommodate to acoustics. We accommodate to the orchestra. We also rehearse it as a symphony first instead of just a solo part. You know, we've played with Zubin, we've played with Gergiev, we've played it with lots and lots of people. So those guys are phenomenal in their own right. So they add to the music and to our own performance that we bring. And they never really question the two of us' interpretation, because the interpretation is really a unit. It's a one person, two people playing, but it's a one thought process. Because, first of all, we have obviously worked it out. We have practiced it, and we've played it many, many times. So that's unusual. You're not getting two strangers coming together in 3 days and putting the Brahms double together to play a performance. And that makes a big difference. There's no question it makes a big difference. The fact that we can both play the instruments very well, that's a given. And that's something that we utilize to serve that particular music and the way we like to approach the sound projection off the stage, if nothing else. And that's important as well, of course, in this piece, because sometimes the cello get terribly covered by the orchestra, not in Amanda's case. So she's got a powerhouse for a sound. So it's very nice to be able to do all that. Of course, living together, talking about it, doing it little bits to warm up for other concerts where we start slowly sometimes do the slow movement just to warm up together. It all adds long-term to a performance, to a better performance.
Sure. Speaking of long-term relationships, Isaac Stern, of course, was one of your mentors, and I guess you have probably known Michael Stern almost literally since he was born, since he was a young child.
Actually, I know Michael before he was born. Oh, my goodness. I met Isaac in Vera in 1960. Michael was not even born yet.
Right.
So Shira was, his sister, older sister. She, I think, was a year old, maybe 2 years old in Israel. And then I met Michael, of course, when I came to America. After that, as we've grown up together. I've known the family for a very long time. It's my second home, if not the first home in some ways.
There must be a lot of familiarity and familial feeling there working with Michael.
Well, first of all, I have to tell you, I have a great respect for him as a musician and as a conductor. He's a super, super musician conductor. He has done some wonderful work in Kansas City, where I recently played with him. You know, I've seen him progress and grow. I think he's still getting better and better as time goes on all the time. It's a wonderful, for me, I'm only maybe 13 years older, 12 mm-hmm. years, something like that. For me, that's an incredible connection, both to see someone like Michael coming from that ingredient that I know of so well. Don't forget, Isaac, his dad, was my mentor and also my colleague as I got older. So in a way, I'm now the older, being the colleague to the son, which is, we don't consider it that way because the age difference is not as big as it was between Isaac and I, but we do have that symbiotic relationship, I think, that, again, serves a wonderful connection to making music.
Well, we're very much looking forward to it. It's going to be a very exciting opening for the Iris season. Pinchas Zukerman, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today.
Thank you. Thank you.